The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
The open line through till 1 today. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. So whatever's on your mind, it can be on somebody else's mind simply by getting in touch. Well, it could be the MaxCare, the DHSC overspend. It could be Treasury having been told to return to Tynwald next month with a capital funding request to finish reinstating the horse tram tracks. Apparently, they haven't been finished. I hadn't noticed. Did you? Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there, Andy. I will start off, please, with the DHSC overspend,
yeah,
the $20 million, and the request for supplementary vote. So, what I'd like to know, please, Andy, if one of the other listeners or some could come on and tell us, what's the difference between the DHSC overspending by $20 million and coming for a supplementary vote and the DOI just getting on, doing relaying the horse trams, and then coming to Tynwald for a supplementary vote? Why can the DOI not just do that, put the tram track down, and come back to Tynwald for the supplementary vote? This is how much money we need, because we've overspent. I don't see the difference between the DOI doing that and the DHSC just keep coming back for all this 20 million. It's tens of millions every time. So that's the first point.
Yeah.
My second point today, please, was ALF's new border agency. Has it been said somewhere, in case, okay, I've missed it, what the actual setup cost of this agency is going to be, and how many more headcount is it going to need, and what's their ongoing cost going to be?
Initially, they've allocated 1.2 million. Initially, 1.2 million.
For setup?
Yeah, for setup. That's initially, to get started, 1.2 million.
But they haven't said how many headcount,
no,
and how many extra bodies they're going to need and what that ongoing cost is going to be, have they?
No.
So why can't we have answers for that? Because they must know how many extra bodies they're going to need. So it's just, come on, Alf, let's be open and transparent and tell everybody what your new little plan is going to be. And then the next item is also Alf. Basically, Alf, it's a failure, isn't it? Because you've said you were looking for 10 million of savings, and it comes out now it's cost, if I'm right, a 1.5 million to achieve savings of 4. Is that right, Andy?
Roughly.
So actually, because I'm in my mind, Minister Without Portfolio Tim came to Tynwald and asked for something like $500,000, 500,000 as the setup cost to start getting savings, but suddenly we find it's 1.5 million. So I don't remember anybody coming back and asking for any supplementary money for setup costs. And if you've only achieved a 4 million saving, well, you haven't actually, have you? Because it cost you 1.5 million.
Well, this is the difference between the politicians and we, the public, Andrew, is that they say things that presumably mean something to them, but to us, we don't quite get it. We don't quite understand it. Maybe we're missing something, Andrew.
Or they're not being open and transparent, because they're trying to hide the fact that it's actually costing more and they're actually failing. And that's a failure, isn't it? It has to be a failure, because he identified that he wanted a $10 million worth of savings. Well, you haven't got that. You've only got 4. So that is a complete failure. Why did he even come out and say he wanted 10 million? And then also, I suppose it's related there. I see there's a new candidate now standing for Aaron Michael.
Yes.
So that's now three candidates for Aaron Michael. So it makes me think, so is Alf going to stand? And if an existing politician stands, such as Alf, but he recognises that there's a good chance he won't get re-elected, does the politician then receives the payoff, shall we say?
Yes,
they get a payoff, don't they?
They get the parachute payment.
Parachute payment. But if they don't stand, they don't get it.
That's true.
So let's be cynical about this. Why would you not announce your candidacy, even believing that there are stronger candidates there and you won't get re-elected because you'll get your parachute payment?
Well, Mr. Cannon has said in the past, Andrew, that he didn't want to declare. He was on the programme. He didn't want to declare because it would get in the way. They've got government to do through until August. So presumably within 6 weeks or so. And the trouble is, if as Chief Minister, it will put a... You know, put it this way, at the moment we have an element of certainty. We know he's Chief Minister. We don't know if he'd stood, if he says he's going to stand. We don't quite know what the situation is because he's obviously put his hat into the ring. So his rationale is he just wants certainty.
But we have, let's transfer this to other people like Moran, Mr. Peters.
Yeah.
Now, what's he doing? Because I heard, and you know, he can come on and say not, but he wants to actually go and relocate to Blackpool. So surely, you know, again being cynical, why doesn't he just announce his candidature, knowing that he, if he doesn't get re-elected, he'll get his parachute payment, and thanks so much, I can go and fly out of Blackpool and live in Blackpool.
Well, as yet we don't know. We don't know whether he's standing. He's not officially said anything.
But I'm just wondering how many existing MHKs are in this situation where they're just going to announce their candidacy just so they can collect their parachute payment.
But that would backfire on them if they got elected.
Yeah, but they could then resign, couldn't they?
Well, that wouldn't look very good, would it?
I know, but what are the rules about this? Hmm. I mean, can you get elected? But you could just get elected. Well, okay, but I mean, if you think about it, if somebody's at the end and they actually thought, okay, I can't be bothered, I'll just put my name in the hat and I won't do any doorstepping and campaigning, then I just collect the parachute payment.
We'll see.
Wrong.
Anyway, but on your first point, no, we don't quite know what the difference is between DHSC wanting extra money and then asking for it afterwards and DOI not just spending money on the horse, tram, tracks and asking for it afterwards.
I just don't understand why the DOI minister just doesn't instruct the civil servants, come on, start this, get it completed, there we go, it was already down, we've got the rail, just do it. And then when they've done it, the DOI minister comes back to Tynwald and says, okay, need a supplementary vote now because it's cost this amount of money, and if you don't give me the money, then I won't be able to do any TT track improvements next year, or whatever excuse they want to do.
Okay, Andrew, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today. All right, it's 12:15, and David joins us now. David, hello, David.
Hi, Randy. I just support slightly to the last caller there. We shouldn't be relying on supplementary votes to push things through. They produce a budget, and they were talking about it the other day. They produce a budget for things they want to do that are a national need or whatever, things for the community or whatever on that. And I agree with them 100%. What's health doing wanting something like 20.8 million? What for? What did they... Well, they probably need it for something. Yeah. And I just can't understand why the politicians are not delving it into a little bit more and saying, what do you need for that? You know, are we building a new hospital or a new extension or whatever? You can be justified then. But just asking for 20.8 million, I think it was, Andy, just for the health service.
But David, it was always the case. Do you remember DHSC was always coming back? Over years back, DHSC was always coming back for more money for nobles, weren't they? So it's nothing new. Yeah, it's just that the amount's gone up.
Yeah, and that's well above inflation and whatever. And like we said earlier there to the Chief Minister, and I do hope he makes a decision and stands, to tell you the truth, and I don't live in his any before anybody whinges about it, is because at the end of the day, we're getting some direction, and you're quite right. He needs to get on with things that before the government in July is non-existent. But the ordinary politicians that don't do nothing are non-existent. But the minister and members of departments and whatever have still got to do a job right until the day of the election.
Mm.
And that's the issue we've got. And you look at the horse trams and whatever is, where's the QSs? Where are the quantity surveyors looking and saying how much it cost? You know, we've got all the track and it's going to cost X. We've got no quotations from contractors. We don't know who's going to do it, or are they saying that it's going to be done in house? Well, it's not going to be done in house, is it, Andy? We probably, I'm not being degrading to some of the workforce there, they're not going to do it. They've got other jobs to do. We can't get small potholes done and new tarmac laid, but you can in other places.
Okay.
And I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Sorry to have a whinge.
What are you generating, by the way?
I knew you were going to say that. I haven't got the iPad with it.
Okay.
But I'll be about 15%, although it's misty. The problem is we need the turbines in the sea, don't we, to move this mist about.
Okay.
Bananas mist won't exist when them turbines go in, okay?
Thanks for calling today. We mentioned Aaron Michael and the fact that the Chief Minister represents Aaron Michael. And certainly somebody else has declared today, Julia Bell has declared today, so there are now three candidates who throw their hat into the ring for Aaron Michael: Julia Bell, Mary Phillips and Paul Weatherall. And the House of Keys will be dissolved on the 13th of August. On the 26th of August, candidate nomination period closes and the general election is Thursday, 24th of September. Gates open, if you like, 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 at night. And, of course, we'll be live on the air until it all finishes in the wee small hours of Friday, the 25th of September. That's where that's... Now, this money, the Manx public need to know more information about what Manx Care has achieved over the last 5 years. Health and Social Care Minister Claire Christian, MHK, successfully sought Tynwald approval for £20.8 million of taxpayers' money. Additional, this is, to address additional costs incurred over the last financial year. 20 million, that is. 20 million. That's what, £400,000 a week. Anyway, our political correspondent, Phil Gorn, spoke to Claire Christian and asked why, despite several budget increases in recent years, the public are still seeing capacity issues, i.e. bottlenecks, and longer waiting lists.
The public will hear things like, you know, an ageing population and multiple, each person has different multiple needs now rather than singular needs. And these are real factors, but we're not great at communicating that. But also we have added a lot of services. You know, you think about MCALs, that's a brand new service. We've increased budgets within the mental health area and things like that. So we really do need to start communicating that, because from their perspective, they're seeing this dichotomy, exactly what you're saying. I don't feel like I'm getting more for my money, more for this, what taxpayers' money is being spent on. But you'll have to obviously think about the costs of our staff. It's about 80%. You know, we have to pay them in comparator to the UK. That is a big cost in terms of the organisation. And we have over 3,000 employees. So there are these other areas that we really do need to make sure that the public understand that, so that when we do come back, and we have come back, and yesterday the supplementary vote was supported, because we were very, very, very clear from the outset that there were unfunded areas within the budget that we were allocated. And that was not a surprise then for members in coming and asking for this supplementary vote.
Well, there she is, Claire Christian, MHK. I just wonder what you think about this. Claire Christian says that you need to know more, or Manx Care or the DHSC needs to tell you more. And it may be, and somewhere something's happened. She was talking about MCALs and the mental health issues and what have you. Do you feel more informed? Do you feel fully abreast of the whole situation of where Manx Care is? Or do you just know that something isn't right? Do you just have that nagging feeling at the back? If you try and get a dental appointment or find a dentist, an NHS dentist, or get a GP appointment, or go to the emergency department, do you just get the feeling something isn't quite, and you can't put your finger on it, you just know that something isn't quite right? Here's Juan now. Hi, Juan.
Well, 20 million doesn't sound a lot when you say it first, does it, Andy?
It's nearly 21 million.
Splitting hairs now. I was listening to a news article on Manx Radio there last night. It said the rise in domestic violence when major sporting events are on and the World Cup. So I've got to say, ladies, leave the lads alone. It's not their fault that Coronation Street and Emmerdale are not on at the regular times.
I'm There's glad no you said that, not me.
It's just a joke. Just before Bonsai comes on and calls me a misogynist. Just a joke. Just a couple of things. We're talking, I've noticed yesterday, I'm not going to go in depth to it, I'm sure other people will, for the assisted dying. And I'm noticing people outside holding the banners and prospective candidates holding banners. My question would be with that, Andy, is prospective candidates have been advised by the AG's office not to comment on the wind turbine issue. Why are prospective candidates then allowed to go and completely 100% agree with different other things that's very high in the agenda at the moment? It seems to be a rule for one and a rule for another.
Well, presumably the AG's decided that obviously there's a process going on with Orsted at the moment, and they don't want politicians to compromise their future role in any decision-making by setting out their opinion now. I think that's the rationale for that.
But would the rationale not be the same because this happened before the vote for the assisted dying? So is the rationale not the same for that?
Well, there we are.
Quick one there on Stu Peters. Stu did say to me in a comment on Politics page some time ago that he's going to enjoy his retirement. So maybe that's the answer for that one that was there before. What else have we got then? We were talking there the other day with restrictions for the children with the internet. That was an interesting debate that you had yesterday. It was quite measured, that one, Andy, yesterday with the kids from the school.
Well, yeah, they seem to think that it would be difficult to enforce.
Yeah, I like I said the other day, with VPNs and everything. And I had a friend of mine here last week from China, actually, staying with me. And we were talking about this, and he actually edges on Hong Kong because there's less restrictions. But again, the Chinese system is very invasive there, and it can be invasive, and people try and find ways around it. But eventually, it all connects up to bank accounts, and stuff can be taken out of your account at source, and all that stuff. So it's not conspiracy. Stuff that's happening in other countries. It's just a case of how communistic or fascist we want to go down with our country, I suppose. And the points as well Paul Crane was making about shrinking populations and the cost of having families. I have to tie that into the comment that I made the other day as well about the promotion of children being promoted in schools with pronouns and transgenderism. So this has to be brought into the conversation as well. Again, is this education for kids or is it promotion? And I noticed recently a lot of would-be ministers have been asked to support Pride. And again, is this promotion? I believe everyone should do their own thing. I don't have anything against anyone doing their own thing. Live your own life. You do no harm to anyone else and live your own life. But do we need so much promotion with younger children for this type of thing? I had 20 kids in the gym the other night, all under 10, and our pronouns in the gym is, let us grow up and let us be kids. And I think that should be, you know, that should be borne into mind here before we start pushing this stuff down children's throats at an early age.
Well, one thing is certain. The fact is that in 2024 on the Isle of Man, there were 574 births. That's the lowest since 1919.
Yeah, and I mean,
and there are a lot more people living on the Isle of Man than there were then, out of season.
And the world was told they were overpopulated many years ago, and we had the one-child policy in China. And now they're saying that, you know, if it goes on the way it's going in a couple of generations, you know, the humanity won't be able to keep up because of the numbers are going down so much. So we get different points of view from different experts. The last point I just wanted to make, Andy, and another question that was brought up in Timbal yesterday, I think was Julie Edge brought it up, about the border controls and border enforcement and the riots currently happening in Ireland. But I think we have to go back to why them riots are actually happening. And I mean, the comment was made as, you know, are we safe over here? Well, we would be safe over here because them riots are happening because of what the Irish government have done by letting illegal immigrants and asylum seekers stay within the country and use up the assets of that country and the people's money. So that's what's caused this. So are we safe here? We would be safe from what that question was appertained to, because it's the government that actually triggered that off over there.
I think the concern here, Juan, is the fact that at the moment any of those people leave Southern Ireland and go to Northern Ireland, they are in the common travel area, as are we. So
absolutely.
That's the kind of issue with here.
I agree with that at this stage of the game, because our government has left the back door open that we do need some kind of regulation. And I do understand Stephen's point on this, of where this can lead to when Stephen talks about it. But because they've left the back door open so much, we have to have some kind of enforcement. But I think it's a case of, you know, a photo ID of some kind. And again, enforcement with our work visas and everything here was our saviour. Because, you know, if we put some kind of enforcement on that, you know, if people come here, they have to show their contract of employment and who that's with, photo ID before they can get any accommodation, and so we've got there is simple stuff that could be done to keep control of our borders here, and it is a difficult time. I think someone from the AG's office has just been delegated to go to Border Force, so obviously there's money getting spent on this, but we have to just make sure that we're not using a hammer to crack a nut, as they've done with many other things here. Okay. But yeah, I think we do need some security on the border, that's for sure.
All right,
that's me, Andy.
Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past 12. Treasury's been told to return to Timbald next month with a capital funding request to finish the horse tram tracks. Politicians have noted the draft business case put forward by DOI to lay the track between the War Memorial and the Sea Terminal. It's a project which they say could cost up to £3 million. Originally, they were asked to support the progress through the capital project procedures in accordance with financial regulations. Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby tabled an amendment which requested Treasury return to Timbal Court next month with the necessary capital funding request. Looking at the whole situation, our political correspondent Phil Gorn.
So Timbald returned to a topic that it, for some reason, doesn't want to let go of. Should the Douglas Bay Horse Tramway continue all the way through to the Sea Terminal? The debate began with Stu Peters standing in for Minister Crookall, who had leave of absence. Moving, a motion to ask Tynwald to note the draft business case for the reinstatement of Douglas Bay Horse Tramway to the sea terminal and the likely cost of up to £3 million, and also asking for support in progressing through the capital project procedures in accordance with the financial regulations. Well, Mrs. Maltby, in probably the best speech, the highlight for me certainly of this month's Tynwald, wasn't entirely happy with that, and she asked that Tynwald actually, yes, approves the business case, and asks Treasury to return to July Tynwald with the necessary capital funding request, and noting that any further postponement is likely to increase project costs. A lively debate ensued, in which the Treasury Minister was asked to effectively give on the floor of Tynwald Treasury's concurrence without any consideration, so that the Tynwald members could actually just vote on the whole proposal then and there. Needless to say, the Treasury Minister pointed out that there are rules and regulations which probably do need to be followed. So ultimately, the conclusion of the debate, which was supported 21-0 in the House of Keys and only 5-1 in the Legislative Council, Tynwald agreed that yes, indeed, they would like to come back again next month to have a further debate on the reinstatement of Douglas Bay Horse Tramway all the way through to the sea terminal. I wonder what they'll decide next month.
The story continues.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
At Bagode Cattery, we've been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cattery, we care for our customers' cats and treat them as our own. Visit bagode.com or call 321 989.
The Granite Centre in Laxey. For complete kitchen renovations, replacement worktops, and with over 35 distinct styles and finishes, there's a Kuka instant boiling water tap for every home. Call 612287 or visit the laxeykitchenco.im today.
Q-Plus is much more than a plumbing and heating trade counter. Come and explore the largest bathroom showroom on the island, where we're always updating our displays and stocking the latest bathroom designs and trends to make sure we have just what you're looking for. Visit Q-Plus on Snugborough Trading Estate or find us on Facebook to see some fabulous bathroom inspiration.
Elevate Rubber Cover from Rubber Roof Shop for one-piece flat roofing systems. No joins, no leaks. We also line commercial box gutters in one piece up to 60 metres with a 20-year written warranty against leakage. Call Rubber Roof Shop on 49667.
Hi, Hyacinth and Richard Bucket, Bouquet, invite you to one of their famous candlelight suppers aboard one of our trains. Onslow and Rose are coming along too, so let's see if the night runs smoothly. Don't miss Comedy Candlelight Supper, Friday the 3rd and Saturday the 4th of July, departing at 7 p.m. To book, call 697-457 or visit rail.im.
Manx Radio Summer of Football, brought to you by Walton's Electrical Store.
And with all the action now well underway across the USA, Canada and Mexico, we've teamed up with Walton's to give you the chance to win a 55-inch TV. To win, all you have to do is work out the famous footballer in the weekly post that will be pinned to the top of the Manx Radio Facebook page. Then listen out to greatest hits every weekday evening from 7 and Saturday live between 1 and 5 each weekend until the 19th of July for your chance to get your name in the big prize draw.
Enjoy a better picture with a new TV from Walton's for perfect football enjoyment. Walton's have offers across a wide range of TVs and electrical items in store. The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
26 minutes before one. Bonzo was with us now. Hello, Bonzo.
Hello there, yes. Just listening to Duan's Oh Dear, Yes, It's All Right, It's a Little Joke about domestic violence. Yeah, domestic violence is no joke. For example, in Northern Ireland, where of course we have had all the protests about the appalling incident, 30 women since 2020 have died as a result of domestic violence, and far more injured. Indeed, there was a case very recently, I think, of a woman who was horribly killed by her former partner, who was, you know, a white Northern Irishman. So I think the idea of saying, oh, yes, domestic, yes, very, very funny. You know, we've got past the days of Dixon of Dock Green saying that, oh, Lord, if I locked up every bloke who knocked his wife about on a Saturday, then, you know, the jails would be too full for proper criminals. In that day, in this day and age, that is absolutely appalling. So I can only say that at best you could call it in extremely bad taste. But then again, he comes up with all sorts of other things as well, such as his obsession with children being explained about pronouns, and his hobby horse about transgenderism. Well, that's typical of the sort of right-wing hate politics that Trump, of course, has put forward in America. And indeed, where Juan spends half his time, in Florida, the kind of hate politics that Ron DeSantis, the current governor, advocates. And if you start then saying, oh, well, you know, people who are sexually confused, we shouldn't really be talking about that. You then get into the territory of what was called Section 28 in the UK. Now, I don't know whether such a thing applied at the time to the or was taken up by the Isle of Man, but Section 28 of the Education Act, 1988, I think it was, which forbade the promotion, you know, et cetera, of homosexuality in schools. And that just meant that schools could not talk about it, couldn't have a book about it in the library, couldn't anything. No, you were, you know, in danger of losing your job if you, say, taught a book in English which mentioned such things. No, you can't. You can't do that. And indeed, teachers who were gay lived in fear of losing their jobs because of the fact that they might be thought to be promoting, etc., homosexuality. You know, people's sexuality is what they're born with. You know, it's not something that they sign up to at a freshers' fair or something like that. To come out with that sort of thing, and then, of course, when you focus such on such minorities, oh yeah, well, they're only a small minority, they're a tiny minority, why are we making a fuss about them? So those people are marginalised and persecuted. Then you get to gay people, right? Why are we making such a fuss about that? Why are political members actually talking about pride and things like that? Yep. So we'll marginalise them. Then we'll marginalise black people. Then we'll marginalise women. Then, which is exactly what's been going on in the US, where the senior ranks of the military, for example, you know, people who, there was a woman who was head of the Navy, woman who was head of the Coast Guard, some other very senior generals who were female, and of course then the chief of staff, the head of the Joint Chiefs, who was a black serviceman. But all of those were removed very quickly under the new Trump regime. And there is a continuous purge now of all those kind of elements going on in the US military and also in the US sort of equivalent of the civil service.
Well, Mr. Trump is no fan of DEI, is he?
Well, no. But
he's only again, carrying out what he said at the beginning. It's not like he's changed his mind.
That is true. A lot of people went, oh, Project 2025. Oh, Lord, no. He wouldn't be mad enough to do that. Sorry. He's actually just doing it line for line, you know, and adding some more as well for good measure. To advocate those sort of things and to push that kind of stuff. But that's exactly the kind of divisive politics which we're seeing now today operating in the Makerfield by-election across, which has been so readily pushed, jumped on with the appalling incident in Belfast. But there were no riots in Belfast for the poor woman who was so brutally murdered by her former partner. So there is this blatant hypocrisy and propagandizing and weaponizing various issues of this nature, marginal issues, in order to drive wedges into the population. And I'm sure Katie Hopkins will be doing exactly the same thing in the Gaiety in the not-too-distant future.
But that's not entered our mainstream politics, has it? We don't hear that in Keys or in Ledgeco, do we? I'm sure we don't, do we?
Not yet. Well, you do slightly from a couple of people, but very much minority. But, not as yet, but I think we will find that there will be a goodly attempt for such things to infiltrate Manx politics.
And the people will have their say.
The thing is that people can be bamboozled, rather. Look at all the people who vote for Reform, which isn't even a political party. It's a company.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that doesn't affect the Isle of Man. That's nothing to do with the Isle of Man, is it? I mean,
but there are a lot of people on the island who have come here in the past 25 years who are extremely sympathetic to Reform-type right-wing politics, as could be seen a few years ago when Nigel Farage played the Gaiety and packed it. And you've only got to look at some of the comments on Isle of Man politics, various other social media strands, Isle of Man politics on Facebook, to see some of the depth of penetration of right-wing, not just simply right-wing politics, but quite extreme right-wing politics. It's bubbling under the surface. And that is something we have to watch for. It's normalised by saying, why are people having pronouns or that sort of thing, to make it look reasonable. And then you go further and further and further into what they will continue to advocate if they can get away with advocating that. They will just then keep on pushing and pushing and pushing, which is what Reform have done in UK, and they've done that very successfully.
Okay.
Too successfully.
Okay, all right. Bonzo, it's good to hear from you as always. Thanks for your opinion. All right, 17 minutes before one. The DHSC, the highest overspend seems to be ambulance at approximately 7 million. This is Andrea. What has that money been spent on in the 2025-26 financial year? Does this include funding for patient transport? While it remains in transition to Manx care, it's been suggested that patient transport has not yet moved over due to funding issues. If so, where has the £7 million been spent? Mark said, I'd like to thank the head of the PSC for yesterday's Public Sector Pensions Act announcement. I retire on Friday at 55 years of age and can take my lump sum. I can now apply for my old job and build up a second government pension with another lump sum by topping it up, says Mark. And Marie says that's why some of the returning candidates are standing, so they are assured of the payment when they leave office. Well, that's true. I mean, this is the rule. If you're a standing MHK and you stand again and you don't get in, you do get a consideration. You get a lump sum payment when you leave. But, I mean, are you really saying that that's why people would stand? Because, again, it could all backfire and they could get re-elected again. So, on the subject of the horse tram, says John in Onchan, rather than horses, I just walked along the promenade, and at the Broadway tram stop, there are now three separate piles of, well, There are three separate piles. I wonder whose responsibility it is to clean them up. I recently saw a group from one of the cruise ships waiting to ride the tram, and several were photographing what was then a single pile. Crikey. Social media. Would be at one time, people would be rushing to get it to put on their roses. And John says the Douglas Tramway delays are a laughing stock. To anybody listening, the amount involved is petty cash. Petty cash compared with the consultancy fees that have been spent elsewhere. And a message in from Paul, who just said much the same thing, the amount of money that they're talking about for the horse trams is a tiny proportion of what has been spent on the Liverpool landing stage. Regarding Paul Rose Bridge, this is Wolfie, who just said, who specifies the way temporary traffic lights are set up? The traffic chaos this morning had to be seen to be believed at Paul Rose Bridge. There seems to be little consideration of the delays caused to hundreds of people. Don't they send police out anymore with those white cuffs on to marshal people around? Is the £20.8 million for the replacement of the Ramsey and District Cottage Hospital? I watched a programme on Sky at the weekend with my grandchildren about the construction of a wind farm off the northeast coast of England. It's expected to generate enough electricity for up to 6 million homes, producing 3.6 gigawatts. It was very interesting. What are the ministers' views on our proposed wind farms at Eerie Stain? Well, we don't have any ministers, John. And there we are. Whereabouts on the northeast coast of England was it? Because hasn't one just been cancelled over there?
It's the Manx Telecom Parish Walk this Saturday. Whether you're walking, watching or driving, remember the roads will be extra busy, so take extra care. For details of road closures and to follow your friends and family, visit parishwalk.com.
Scrap metal coming out of your ears. Then there's only one place to call, Castaignes Scrap Metal, of course. Castaignes pay top prices for lead, brass, copper, aluminium and stainless steel, as well as ferrous metals, scrap vehicles, and they're even licensed to scrap lead acid batteries. Drop it off today or Castaignes can come and take it away. Castaignes Scrap Metal, Foxtel Road, call 801 337.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
Manx MenCap is a dedicated, compassionate and long-standing charity committed to empowering individuals with learning disabilities. Our mission is to create a society where everyone, regardless of their abilities, is given an opportunity to lead a fulfilling and meaningful life. With passionate staff, volunteers and supporters, we are creating a brighter, more inclusive future for all. For more info, visit manxmencap.im.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
The countdown to the 2026 general election is officially on. On Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys for the next 5 years. But what are the things you really want to know from your candidates? How they feel about wind farms, what they do to improve healthcare, or how they plan to tackle government efficiency. Whatever it is, if you have a burning question for those standing, we want to hear from you. You can find out how and everything else you need to know about the upcoming election on our dedicated election website. Just head to manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12 minutes before one. Oh, Andrew's back with us. Hi, Andrew. Have we got Andrew? No, we can't find Andrew. In that case, so let's get to Peter's with us. Hello, Peter.
Oh, hello, Andy. It's Peter Melcott here. I want to speak, just to respond to what's said with regard to people standing for the election and being able to talk or not able to talk about the application, yeah?
Yeah, OK.
A message from the His Majesty's Attorney General actually came into my hands. It went to the House of Keys, and I think it clarifies the situation, unless there's been anything else said. It refers to the Marine Infrastructure Management Act 2016. Now, that is the process. The Act lays down the process that is followed. I've actually read the Act, and it's very complex, and there are a lot of stages that this sort of application goes through. The bit that is relevant to the question that's arisen is whether a person can say or are they obliged to be quiet. I can find nothing in the Attorney General's letter that puts an obligation on prospective candidates to be silent. What it is, and if I can make it extremely clear, I'll try. The situation is that there will be a final decision on this will arise after the general election. The body that takes the decision, or the final decision, it seems to be, is the Council of Ministers. It doesn't go before Tynwald. It goes to the Council of Ministers under the Act. Now, what the Attorney General is saying is that people who take a decision on this by well-established standards, not only standards of conduct, but actually it would also fall, I would say, into the standards established by administrative law, is that when you're going to take a decision, you must be entirely impartial. And if you have already taken a position on the subject, you can't really take a decision on whether this application should go ahead, because that would give the impression of bias. And what he's pointing out is that if a person who is standing for election happened to be on the Council of Ministers after the election, when that new council's formed, that person would have to withdraw from any decision regarding this application because they had taken a position. That would be on the grounds of fairness and well-established case law, as well as the standards expected of people in public office. We don't know who's going to be on the Council of Ministers. Suppose you've got a person who's never been in the House of Keys. Well, I doubt whether that person would go direct to the Council of Ministers, but he also points out that if the Council of Ministers is short of the necessary quorum, I think, then what they do, they have a means of actually making someone who's not on the Council of Ministers a temporary member for the purposes of deciding this position. So I suppose someone who is standing for election for the first time potentially, arguably, could be in that position. Well, if they'd taken a position, they wouldn't be entitled to sit and make a final decision with regard to the application that's being made.
Right.
So in summary, what I read is that this is an advisory letter advising members of the principles, both of law and of standards in public office, of when you take a decision like this, of having to be completely impartial. He's just advising them of the position. I can find nothing in his letter that says people can't take a position. He's just telling them that what the effect would be if they do take a position. Is that clear?
That's absolutely clear. Yeah, it's a warning, basically. It may hobble their position in the future, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you see, it was the same if you sit on a tribunal or something like that. You can't. You must be totally impartial. And you, I mean, when I was on the employment tribunal, if ever a case came, and it did, I was on work permits appeal. Once a case came where, in actual fact, I hadn't taken a position, but I happened to know the person who was coming along, and I immediately said, "I can't sit." You see, you have to have strict standards of impartiality before you take decisions about other people's rights and whatever they're doing. And he's just reminding them of that. But I think somewhere along the line, the idea's got around that there's some sort of law, though I don't know what it would be, that they can't actually give an answer if someone asks them what their situation is. As far as I can see, they can, but they wouldn't be allowed to participate in the final decision-taking process.
Okay. Appreciate it, Peter. Thanks for clearing that up.
Is that helpful?
Thank
you.
Very helpful. Thank you very much indeed, Peter. And it leads me on to a letter, a note from Ian, who just said, given the clear process timeframes laid out in the MIMA, Marine Infrastructure Management Act, the general election dates, the knowledge of those, and the understanding of the quasi-judicial obligations placed on Comin by the MIMA Act, why did Comin choose to accept the Moore Vanin application when it did, rather than defer acceptance, knowing that it would cut across the general election and cause conflict that we now see between the primary democratic duties of MHKs and that of the planning process? And in which it appears that the planning process is the winner and the electorate is the loser, as Peter pointed out. Candidates can have an opinion, it's just that they won't be included in any decision-making process in the future because they've kind of cancelled it out. That's that situation. The £20.8 million, apparently £19 million is revenue funding, £1.8 million is capital funding to complete phase one of the endoscopy modernisation programme. DHSC says the single largest pressure was staff costs. This coupled with MaxCare's need to maintain safe levels of emergency care, acute hospital services, mental health and community settings cost £12.8 million. Well, we'll have more details on the breakdown of that £20.8 million. Here's a note. I wonder whether you can help me. The Niarble Cafe refurbishment was completed some time ago. When is the Niarble Cafe going to reopen, says John. And Terry said, has anybody seen police carrying firearms around the island over the last couple of days? I've heard reports of training exercises taking place and would like to know, is this actually happening? Because nobody said. The horse trams were full yesterday afternoon. People clearly love them, so why on earth didn't they finish what they started? Where do you want to start? Does anybody know whether the Department for Enterprise has made any tangible progress in creating new revenue and inward investment from the £1 million invested in the Sovereign Data Asset Register project? Says B, a lot was promoted last year, but doesn't appear to have been any progress figures yet. Anybody know? Right, that's it from me. Alex is on tomorrow, and on Monday, the 22nd, the Treasury Minister's on. Chris Thomas will be on. If you want to get a message in the meantime, call 682 631 answer phone or email maninline@manxradio.com. Thanks to Chris on the phones today.
WINT